Welcome to BunSports.com for another podcast as we are in mid-February now, right in the heart of college basketball season. Recruiting is over, but college football season will be right around the corner. It's just about 5 months away, and we'll be in full swing here at BunSports.com. But we do have some other things that we would like to discuss with you. Welcome to the podcast today. I'll bring the professor in now. What about football and basketball? Does it fill the void here in the South?
Well, not really, but when you talk about the SEC, well, you got to say Kentucky probably dominates. The rest of the SEC doesn't. But, you know, we have the football season, then we have the playoffs, then we have the bowls, we have the NFL playoff, the Super Bowl, recruiting signing day, and then there's spring practice. Maybe somewhere in between there will be a pause for the Final Four in basketball, college, and the Masters, of course.
Well, I'm a big golf fan, so I enjoy the Masters. And as you said, the NFL draft is interesting to a degree. But I like college basketball, and during this time, I do watch some SEC games. As painful as they are, some of them, I do watch SEC. I'll tell you what's not painful, and that's watching the Kentucky Wildcats play. If you missed that game Tuesday night, they escaped Death Valley very, very narrowly in a great college basketball game. Well, let's talk about the NFL draft, which will be upcoming in a couple of months. What do we want to expect this year as SEC fans, as college football fans, looking at this draft?
You know, it's always interesting, Jacob, and we'll ask questions, and everybody's done their speculation through the mock drafts and so forth. Will it be Jameis Winston? Will it be Marcus Mariota, or maybe someone else, like, for instance, Leonard Williams, a defensive tackle from Southern Cal. And that's who the spotlight would be on. But, you know, the NFL, really, they build their team. The strength of the team is not round one. It's round two through seven. That's where the strength of NFL teams are built.
When we look back at past drafts, and there have been some memorable ones, and I'll pose this question to you right now as you think about Andrew Luck going high, Johnny Manziel, of course, all the hoopla about him last year as he fell down the board, kept sliding, and RG3 a couple years ago came out of nowhere. What's memorable when you think about a draft memory that you might have?
Well, you know, when you think about it, of course, we could go back to way back to the day when Bart Starr was the last player taken, and he's now in the Football Hall of Fame. But it's kind of ironic, isn't it, Jacob, that A&M in the last few years have had two quarterbacks drafted by the NFL. Of course, Ryan Tannehill, who was a converted wide receiver. Mm-hmm. And that's how he started out, and that's what he was playing for quite a while. And then there was Manziel, who started out as Mr. Football and Johnny Football and that sort of thing. But now Tannehill is one of the upper-level quarterbacks in the NFL.
He is.
And Johnny Manziel completed less passes than Lynch, the running back, has spoken to the media.
Wow. Well, at least Johnny Manziel, I would say he's there to, so he wouldn't get fined, but I'm going to ask you right now about his treatment. He's going into rehab to deal with, he said, to improve himself. Now, we don't know if that means he's got an alcohol problem or some other problem. Obviously, he's got some problem. So I want to ask you about that and what that means for him. And really, what, as the professor, if Johnny Manziel listens to this show, and we know, I'm sure he does, if he listens to this show, what advice do you have for him?
Well, I think it's whatever his problem is, whether it is substance or whether it's mental or whether it's something else, we all know that his life has really been lived out of control, and we've watched that. And I think football fans, they weren't being critical of him in the sense that they kept talking about him being out of control, whether it be the making the money sign or all the things that he did. But if he can get his life in control and become the kind of community person, could we say that? The community person that he needs to be, and not, it's not everything about him. I think it would at least give him a chance to whether to see he can make a leader in a football uniform or not.
The opportunity's there for him. It really is, if he can just get his act together, and that'll be the big question going forward. The Cleveland Browns organization has invested a lot in him. They really have, and it would be a shame to see all of that go to waste. Let's transition now to college basketball. As we've talked about, SEC basketball is not the most interesting, but I don't want to just keep piling on because they have some pretty good teams this year in the SEC. It's actually improved, and there's one That's really impressive. And I'm just going to put – I'm going to exempt them. They're in the Final Four because I'm not letting you on this program say that Kentucky's not in the Final Four. But who would be your other three teams if you had to pick the Final Four based on what you know right now?
You know, it's always interesting, isn't it, Jacob, that it would be pretty easy right now to say Virginia and Duke, and we'd put them there, in there. And then I think I'd go out west and get Gonzaga. And that would be my Final Four. But as you well know, at this time of year, we always think these are going to be the teams, and it usually doesn't work out that way because the matchups, this is a one-and-out deal. And one-and-out deal means that Kentucky could get beat one-and-out and not be in the Final Four.
And that's the strange thing is they keep winning and winning. Do they need that loss? Do they need to go ahead and get that over with? Because, as you said, the pressure will be so much more realized by them in that tournament than it is right now, just playing on the road at LSU, playing on the road at Florida. It's just not the same. Well, let's talk about recruiting. That finished up last Wednesday was National Signing Day, and of course the SEC with 10 of the top 20, 12 of the top 25, would just continue to stockpile talent in this part of the country. Talk about the dominance of the SEC and what this means going forward.
You know, Jacob, it's fascinating. It's hard to even put your arms around the fact. You think you just quoted a couple of statistics about these teams finishing in the top in the recruiting world. And think about that. Now, you said 10 of the top 20, 12 mm-hmm. of the top 25. Well, think about this. The Big Ten had two.
Ugh.
The Big Ten had two. And each of the Pac-12 had three to finish second in the other major conferences like the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Big 12 each had two. Mm. Now, that's really something when you think about it.
It's a major difference, major difference. And you talk about the Big Ten, of course, the national champion. I mean, they have the national, and they only had one class that really finished high, and that was, of course, Ohio State. Alabama, again, a great class.
Yeah, but let's look at another team just for a moment, Jacob.
Okay.
The Oregon Ducks have really achieved what they have. They've never had what we would consider one of the great recruiting classes. But they've always had the right people. They must know exactly what they want. You know, that probably is the strength of their team. They know who they are. They know what they want and what they're going to do. There's no confusion about it. But this year, for instance, they have a pretty good recruiting class.
Yeah, they do.
And so we wonder now if they start bringing in better talent, even though they've had talent. There's no question about that. I'm not insinuating that. Does that mean they're going to have an upgrade? Well, if they do, they'll really be something. But another thing, you know, Tom Lemon, who does recruiting, has been one of the top analysts for years and years. For a long time, I think he did USA Today. He had a national syndication that he wrote. Now he does it mainly with CBS. Well, Tom Lemon made a statement. He said in the past 30 years of following recruiting, he has never seen a more complete class than the one Nick Saban in Alabama got this year.
Wow. Well, they were number one in two polls, number two in two others, but it was clear that Alabama, of course, had the best class. If you look at, as some people say, USC, but I think Alabama, if you look top to bottom, had the best class. The most top players from anywhere in the country were on the Crimson Tide, and of course, it's just a testament to what Nick Saban continues to do, and we'll see if that will translate into championships going forward. Next week, I want to get your thoughts on the early signing date. That is a very interesting topic. We've covered a lot of ground today, but I want to end with a question about players with trouble in their past. And Alabama signed Jonathan Taylor. Of course, he was kicked out of Georgia for some domestic violence situations, and we see this a lot now with college athletes. We've seen it with Auburn players. We've seen it with Georgia taking players in from other, and also Florida under Urban Meyer took quite a few of those. So what is your position on that, and should these universities take a chance and the liability that it becomes when these players have the opportunity to do another serious incident and it would really be a black eye like Jonathan Taylor at Alabama?
Well, Jacob, I believe that it would be important for us to really look at what's going on. Now, the universities themselves, they investigate the situation. They look at it. I'm sure they interview everybody they can get and their neighbor. And they try to determine, I think, there are two or three things. First of all, they're trying to find out, is this systemic in this person's life? Is it something that he has repeatedly done? Second, you know, some of the, you know, the attitude that you've got when you do some, I don't know what we call it, dumb or just tragic kind of things that, mm-hmm. that young people do sometimes, and they do scar them and mark them for the rest of their life. But when you begin to look into the person's life, his background, what's going on, there's just a lot that we need to let the universities really do the investigation, and because I know that they don't want to make a mistake either, and I know that sometimes they may be willing to take a risk on someone who's really a special athlete, but at the same time I think that we need to look at these people and try to find out how we can help them, how we can make a difference in their life. And really, is this something that's just a part of their DNA?
Some fascinating discussion, as always, and it's a debate and goes back and forth, obviously, but one that will continue to be had, and we hope that Jonathan Taylor does not end up in another situation like he had at Georgia. If he does, obviously it's the end of the road for him, and he's on very thin ice there at Alabama. According to the coaching staff, he's done everything they've asked him to do. We'll see where this goes. Next week, two topics I want to get into is we'll have another rapid-fire session. I think this has been great. We've covered a lot of ground. What about the early signing date? What are the professor's thoughts on that? I'll give some of mine as well. And who could be the TCU of next year? TCU came out of nowhere this year, as we know, and they almost made it into the college football playoff, and they waxed Ole Miss in the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. Who could be that team coming out of nowhere? I think TCU will be TCU next year. I think everybody knows they're going to be good. We'll talk about that, among other things, on next week's edition of the BunSports.com podcast. It's the off season, but we're not taking that off. We're right here for the professor. I'm Jacob Bunn. We'll see you next time.